And when you build an altar, what do you have to do? Second Corinthians, chapter 10. It says in verse 4, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. All right, now he's going to tell you what you need to do. This is how you build your altar. It says, casting down imaginations. Well, that's interesting, because imagination is not the real world. I mean, that's where, you know, Disney World comes into it. And, of course, for Christians, many Christians, they live in Disney World, especially heaven, you know. It's just part of Disney World. That's where you have a lot of fun. Casting down imagination, every high thing that exalted itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Wow. And you have built your altar. And before you worship God, there's your little program. Go through it. And make sure you have done what God said. Because worship is a very, very important thing. When Abraham, many years later, after his son was born, the Lord said to him, I want you to take your son now up on Mount Moriah and offer him there to me. And so Abraham is going up the mountain there with his son. He left the donkey down there because he couldn't get involved with what they were going to do up there. And he left his servants down there, the slaves, because they couldn't be involved in what he wanted to do either. What's he going up on the mountain to do? He's going up here to worship God. What's he got? He's got a knife in his hand. He's got fire there in a little whatever doover. And he's also got some wood. Oh, they're carrying the stuff up there. And his son, Isaac, says to him, Father, I see you've got the knife, you've got the fire, you've got the word, but where is the sacrifice? Oh, Abram said, God will provide himself a sacrifice. He'll provide himself. Oh, Lord, I didn't know that God would provide himself a sacrifice, but he did. You see? So he got to the top, and Isaac, I don't know whether he understood or whether he didn't. But anyway, there's no talk about a fight, a struggle, or anything. But he builds the altar, and then he lays the wood. Then he takes his son and binds him and lays him on the altar. Raises the knife ready to sacrifice this son to the Lord. And the Lord said, Abraham, he said, I'm here, Lord. Don't touch the boy. I never intended for you to touch the boy. But I wanted to know. I wanted to know. I wanted to know one thing from you. And God is asking you today this same question. That Christ that's in you, who does he belong to? He's the Son of God. Is he yours? I mean, you know, is he there for your convenience? Is he there to help you to live a better life? Is he there to take away your cancer or whatever problems you've got? Wait, who belongs to that son that's in you? Lord, he's your son. He's your son. I don't have any right over him, but he is my Lord. In other words, he's the king in here. He's the king. And if you want your body to become that vessel that he will inhabit for himself, and that Christ will rise up to become the king of the kingdom, which is you, then God will do something for you. Because you see, here's Abram, 100 years old, His wife is 90 years old. She's never had a child in her life before. But at 90 years of age, she produces this child. And now God says, I want you to offer him to me. And he never hesitated. Abram never hesitated. Oh, God, wait a minute. I waited 100 years. You know, here's my wife. She's 90 years old. Look, all of those years, and I've cried out, oh, God, give us a child, give us a child. And you never gave us a child. And now you wait until I'm 100, and you give us a child, and now you want me to offer him back to you. You see, that was not what he was saying. God, you are God. Beloved Christians have to learn, God is God. And he's not some plaything for us. And God is not working on the principle that if you want something, I'll just give it to you. God has a program. And if what you want, if what you're desiring in your life is according to God's program, God will make sure it happens. But I want to tell you, too many people today have got their own program. And they're wanting God to comply. And he's not about to. You see, if we're going to see God bring this change about in our body, because that's what it's all about, then you will have to get into God's program. And just because you may be a preacher, or just because you may be a Christian in some fellowship, and you've got some position in that fellowship, does not mean that you necessarily are fulfilling the will and purpose of God. God has a program for every person that's ever been born. But it may not be what you made up your mind you want it to be. And I tell you, I've had a strange sort of a life in some way. I was brought up in a Christian home, but I went through the church thing, giving my heart to Jesus when I was 10 years old, and all of those things. But you see, I became a missionary with my wife eventually, just after we were married, and then came back and went into pastoral ministry, and I thought, well, this is it, you know. Once you're a pastor, I think you're about ruined for everything else. Nothing else much you can do after that. So I thought that was going to be it. But you see, when I'm 40 years of age, I'm back in my workshop. I'm saying, God, what are you doing? I don't understand. And he said, you don't have to. You'll be obedient to me. And I had learned at that point that was what I wanted to be. I said, Lord, whatever you want, it's fine with me. And after a period of about 2 years in which something had to die in me, which was my old program, that had to die. I want to tell you, I've had people that have, you know, been in some very ordinary kind of church, you know, just going and doing what you're supposed to do and polish the seat and then you go home. All of those things, and they've done it for years. And then suddenly they hear the truth. And they say, oh, brother, this is it. This is it. Now they're going to go out and they're going to preach and save the world now with the kingdom of God. I said, forget it. I said, you just zip your lip until you've gotten rid of whatever has been up in here. Because I want to tell you, you cannot just change your mind. Those doctrines that we've learned, that theology, I mean, it sticks in here. I don't know what it's got in it, but it sure sticks in there. And it takes some shifting. It really does. And it's not until that thing dies in you that you will be able to get into God's program. Ask me, because I know how long it took for me. But then I'm a slow learner. You may be able to do it quicker. But the truth is today that we must be involved in God's program. In other words, if you're not on the journey, none of this is going to happen to you. But in the process, you're going to learn how to build an altar, and you're going to learn what true worship is. And true worship is not what you do in church. True worship is your own personal life and relationship with God. And if you have that, then in what you do in church will have some reality attached to it. But for many people, what they do in church, they would never do in their home. You see? Okay. So, going back here now. So we've got him on the road now. Here's Abram. He's on the road. And he's had his first visitation from God. So, in chapter 15, verse 1. It says, after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. So here's a vision now from the Lord, saying, fear not, Abram, I am thy shield and exceeding great reward. Well, he needed that. He really needed that, and so do you. I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. Oh, Lord. What does it mean? It means a shield is something that will keep you from being hurt by whatever there is out there. So he said, I'll be your shield, and that means nothing can touch you unless I allow it, which he's not going to do. So he said, I'll be your shield, and also I will be your exceeding great reward. You see, the disciples said to Jesus there at one stage, they said, you know, we've left everything, Lord. You know, we've left our boats, we've left our fishing business, and it's all finished now, it's all gone. And we haven't got married because we couldn't. We're all the time walking with you and doing whatever you're doing. And, Lord, what's the end result here? Well, I mean, what are we going to get out of this? And so he said to Abram, I am your exceeding great reward. If Christ dwells in you, what else do you need? Come on. What else do you need? You've got everything. You've got everything that you could possibly want or need. Christ in you, the hope of glory. So Abram, he's doing very, very well. And he had just come back when God said this to him. We'll just back up a little bit into the previous chapter, verse 16. He'd just come back from the battle of the kings. And these kings had started a war. But in this war, of course, Lot had left Abram. He had left Abram at Abram's request. But they both had an abundance of cattle. And they couldn't really travel together. So he said, Lot, you tell me which part of the area that you want. Well, he looked around and said, I think down there, looks like the best bit of ground there is. So he said, that'll do me. Abram said, away you go. So he went. And after Lot went, God said, Abram, just stand up there, will you? Now, have a look to the south, as far as you can see, that's yours. And look to the north, as far as you can see. Look to the east, look to the west, as far as you can see, it's yours. To you and to your seed, I will give that land to you. Wow, I am thy exceeding great reward. Well, God hasn't said to you, stand up and, you know, see as far as you can see that way, as far as you can see this way and that way and this way, I'm going to give it to you. What has he said? He said, you are heirs of God. And joint heirs, that's equal portions with Jesus Christ. What does he own? He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. He owns the gold and silver in every land. He owns the earth. Psalm 24, verse 1. He owns the earth. He owns everything in the earth. What's in the earth? There's gold, there's silver, there's diamonds, there's precious stones, there's oil, there's coal. You know, I mean, you've got groups of people in the world think they own the oil down there. So when we want to buy it, they're going to charge us the highest price they can get for it. I want to tell you that oil belongs to the Father. It belongs to God. And you are an heir of God and a joint heir with Jesus Christ. You see, he said, I'm your exceeding great reward. Oh, Lord. And I want to tell you something. You don't have to die to get your inheritance. Oh, Lord. I mean, you know, you got a very rich father and he's got about, you know, $50 million. And you're kind of looking at him every morning to see if he's got a headache or something, you know. But see, Christ in you, there's nothing that you need. Nothing. But we are the heirs of God. Joint heirs with Jesus Christ. Well, he met somebody that day because it says here in verse 18, Melchizedek, king of Salem, he brought bread and wine. And he was the priest of the Most High God. And he comes to Abraham. Wow. Because this man was a part of the divine program that was being set in motion. I mean, this is God virtually starting a new race of people. You hear this? He's starting a new race of people. So this was very important in God's program. And because Abraham is, he's being faithful and he's doing what God's telling him to do. A little slow sometimes, but he's doing it and the journey is continuing on. So this Melchizedek, he brings the bread and the wine. Oh Lord. The body and the blood of Jesus Christ. You see? But not the flesh body. Oh no. When Jesus said in John chapter 6, if you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you will live forever. He was not talking about eating this literal flesh, nor drinking this blood. I mean, that would have been totally opposite to what God said. In fact, God said, anybody in Israel that drinks blood's out. That was it. You are finished, as far as God was concerned. You're not allowed to drink blood. But he is saying, eat my flesh, drink my blood. So what does this mean? See, the flesh of Jesus Christ was spirit. It was spirit. And his blood was his life. It represented his life. It wasn't the life in the blood. It was his life that was the breath of God. So that's why on the cross, at the end of that day, he said, it is finished. And he just simply said, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. Why? He's dead. Exactly the same as when you come to the end of the road, if you do come to the end of the road in this life. When that last breath is expressed, your body's dead. The spirit has returned back to God. That's it. So, he's got the bread and the wine. In other words, Abram is understanding that there's to be a change in his body. A change in his body. Why? Because the truth is that this man was required to birth the Christ. Did you hear that? But then the interesting thing is, so are you. You are required to birth the Christ. This is the missing link in most of Christianity today. People have not been taught, they've not understood, but you are required. Chapter 1 of Genesis, verse 28, it says, Adam, not Adam and Eve, Adam, I want you to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Now, we haven't come to it yet, but God says to this man, Abram, when he says, you've not given me any son or heir. And God said to him, can you count the stars, Abram? He said, no, Lord, I cannot. He said, so shall your seed be. And he's talking to you. So shall your seed be. So shall your seed be. You hear this? So shall your seed be. So shall your seed be. As the stars of heaven. You say, man, how are we going to produce, you know, that kind of response? Are we going to produce that many children? See, this is the whole reason why these things have remained a mystery, because we have not understood. But I want to tell you, your seed will be as the stars of heaven when you do what God has told you to do. That's coming up. Hang on. So it says here then, blessed be, verse 19, he blessed him and said, blessed be Abram of the Most High God, that's El Elyon, and possessor of heaven and earth. Abraham was the possessor of heaven and earth. Oh God, what a visitation that was. And he's been told that he possesses the heaven and the earth. Of course, he's talking about his body, because this body is your heavens and earth, or God's heaven and earth, if you like. This is what we really are in God. So that in the New Testament, when it talks about the ends of the ages, it says that the earth shall melt with fervent heat, and so on, and all these things. So I get emails from people saying, well, explain this to me. Tell me, you know, what are we going to do? Where are we going to be when this whole world is going to be burning up and, you know, there's fire and flames and everything? I said, well, I don't know anything about that. I said, all I know is that this heaven and this earth is going to be changed. It's going to be changed. In the atoms of your body, we shall not all die, we'll not all sleep, but we will all be changed. And people say to me, well, how in the world could that happen? I'll tell you. The Christ of God that dwells in you is in the very center of your being. It's called your heart. The Bible calls it your heart, because this is where the center of life is in your body. That Christ is the Christ of God. He is God. And here he is in the very center of your being. But I want you to understand that he's not in some little box there, you know, and waiting for somebody to take the lid off or whatever. In this center of your being, he already functions, because he is wired into every part of your being. I want you to know every cell in your body is connected to that Christ. Every cell is alive in your body. Every cell, every molecule is alive in your body. And the only life in your body is that Christ. So everything, every cell in your brain is connected into the Christ. Every cell in your memory, wherever that is connected into the Christ. You understand? Everything in your body is connected into that Christ. That's why I know the change can take place in me and in you. Because the Christ is, I use the term hardwired, because, you know, many people in the electronic industry, they understand that. It means direct connection. You see, people have this kind of mental concept, Christ, oh yeah, well, he's in some little kind of cage in there, probably gold, you know, I mean, it's got to be gold, but it's a special little cage in there, and he's just sitting in there waiting and waiting and waiting, and one day, I don't know what he's going to do, but he's going to do something. Listen, the Christ in you is the reality of who you are. It's the life center of your very being. He is the life center of your being. And he is functioning right now. The problem is, we are not aware of his function. You see? And that's why, you know, you've got to kind of convince people. I'm not going to convince you. If you want to believe something else, go ahead. All I know is this is the truth that I have experienced in my life. And that's the only truth that I can share with you. This is not a book that I read. This is not some tape I listened to. This is not another preacher. This is what I have been told by the Lord. So, here we are. That Christ in you is hardwired into every system, your nervous system, and whatever other systems there are in your body. He is wired into it. Therefore, it is not very difficult for him to bring about changes in our body. Not very difficult at all. So, Abram now, fear not, he said, I'm your shield, an exceeding great reward. And so in verse 3 it says, you haven't given me any seed. You haven't given me any son or heir. God, what are you doing? I mean, you're telling me you're giving me all of these things, but you're not giving me a son and heir to leave it all to. I mean, you're telling me, look, you're giving me all of this country out here, but I don't have a son. And here's what the Lord said to him. He said, well, first of all, he said, I'll make one of my slave men, one of my servants. I'll make him my son and heir. He's born in my family. And God said, no, you won't. No, you will not. It says here, this shall not be your heir. This is verse 4. But he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels. You see that little phrase? Thine own bowels. You mark that in your Bible because that's going to be very important for you. Not just have a son, but that son is going to come out of your own bowels plus nothing. See? Now we're living in a world where you men, us men, we can't have a child on our own. I got to use my wife if we want to have a child. But then you women, you can't have a child without something else either. My wife can't have a child unless I'm there. You see? But that's not what God's talking about here. Out of your own bowels. Plus nothing. Just mark that down. We're not going to go into that just now, but that is a very real issue. And so he says, look toward heaven. He said, your seed will be as the stars of heaven. So, of course, Abram goes home, says to his wife, we're going to have a child. And she said, yeah, well, of course, you know, God has forgotten how he made women. I'm 90 years old. I'm 80 years old. What's the difference? 10 years, not much. 10 years. I'm 80 years old. And there's no way in the world I could possibly have a child. So, Abram, I'll tell you what, because we can't make God look stupid, you know. He said we're going to have a child, so we better have this child. But here's what to do. You go in, I will give you our slave girl as a wife. She'll become a surrogate mother. And so that's what he did. So he used a surrogate mother. That's why people joined the church. Hello. I'm not making fun of anybody. I'm just trying to help you to see some realities here. Why do people join the church? Because they can't reproduce on their own. You want to win souls for Christ, you've got to have an organization behind you. You know, you've got to learn how to do it and all these things. And you've got to have somewhere to bring them. I mean, you know, if you bring a soul to Christ, then you've got to have a nursery there somewhere. You see? And that's why. I mean, I'm being honest with you because this was me. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me. And, you know, I thought that was how it worked. I mean, you couldn't. I've never seen anybody just going out winning souls for Christ unless they belong to the church. Because what are you going to do with them? If you bring somebody to Christ and you don't belong to a church, what are you going to do with them? Take them home? Mike White might not like that, you know. So, this was very important, out of your own bowels. And he said, so shall thy seed be. Well, then, of course, there is a sacrifice. I'm going to leave that because that's another story. And I'm going to leave that little bit. It's not vital to what I'm sharing with you now. But in chapter 17, in verse 1, you have another visitation. And so it says here, I am the Almighty God. Walk before me and be thou perfect. Which means complete and fully in agreement with me. That's with God. See? Be complete and in total agreement with God. And he says, I will make my covenant with you. This is also another very interesting thing. Listen, how many of you people that God has made a covenant with you? See, like as a personal covenant. Does God do that? Of course. God is the covenant-keeping God. A covenant is an agreement. But this is an agreement that God makes with you. It's not a list of rules that he wants you to keep. No, no, no. This covenant says, I guarantee you that I will do this and this and this for you. This is my program in you. And that covenant is very important to us. Because we need to know that God is a covenant-keeping God. And he's made a covenant with all of us. Actually, the covenant that he made with Abraham, is also with us. And so it says here in verse 2, I will make my covenant between me and thee, and will multiply thee exceedingly. And Abram fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, as for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be a father of many nations. Oh, but that couldn't be for us. That's just for Abraham. I don't think so. Do you mean to say that God is telling you that you are to, that God's covenant is that he will be a father, that you will be a father of many nations? Why? But then your seed is going to be as the stars of heaven. How many stars are there up there? Oh, man. I mean, that's really something. Astronomical. I mean, figures so long that you couldn't even fit them on, you know, yards of paper. It's an incredible thing. See, they don't talk just about miles between the stars up there. They talk about light years. 86,000 miles per second is the speed of light. multiplied by how many seconds there are in a year, and you've got a light year. Man, I mean, it boggles the mind just to think about it. And the bigger the telescopes are, the more stars they're finding. See, when they only just use their eyes, they said, oh, well, that's just a few stars up there like that. But then when they started to build telescopes, they began to look out further and further and further. And the further they look, there's more and more galaxies, not just stars, galaxies with millions of stars in them. And your seed will be as the stars of heaven. Have you thought about this? How do you rationalize this? I mean, what goes through your mind when you hear God say, your seed will be as the stars of heaven? Well, I'm going to tell you. Would you like to know? Every man, every woman, every child that has ever been born on this earth from creation, and every child and every person that will be born for as long as this earth will be in process will be the stars of heaven seed that we are going to produce. Oh God, does that boggle your mind? How are we going to do it? That's the secret that we're going to share this afternoon. Because this, I think that what I find among God's people is that they've gone to sleep. Because there's like nothing new, you know. I mean, we've been through all the doctrines and we've been over them a dozen times and we've put them out as Disneyland and we've put them out in all kinds of ways and understandings. And there's about nothing more. But see, there are things today which God is revealing, which is just going to excite God's people as we begin not just to hear it, but to allow it to become the reality of our life. But I'm going to tell you, nobody's lost on this earth. But at the moment, if things remain as they are, then that seed will not be produced. So we have an obligation. We have an assignment in God to produce that seed. Now, to know it's the how. It's what's going to happen in order for this to happen. That is the important issue. So we're going to leave that for this afternoon because there'll be another maybe 2 hours that it'll take to go through that one. But I hope that this morning that you have been excited just a little to know that God is active in you and you are on a journey. And if you become static and you're stuck in the rut, of some rut that somebody has suggested for you in the beginning, or you got just hooked into it yourself, and you're feeling like, hey, it's time for a change, then listen to what God has to say, because there may be some ideas that God will give to you that will show you perhaps how this journey will play itself out in your life. So may God bless you, encourage you, and cause you to respond to him in faith and obedience, and you will be blessed. So may the Lord bless you, encourage you. Amen. Yeah.